Right now, let's go to Bob McGinnis in Washington, D.C. Bob, we want to talk to you about some activities happening worldwide, geopolitical activities, that we need to have your input on. I think we probably should start with the top story. And as I understand it from this last week, the U.S. soldier that massacred some Afghan families. Bob, talk to us about the situation. Can you make it better understandable for us that are watching from afar what happened?
Well, Jimmy, you had a staff sergeant south of Kandahar that was working on the special operation organization from a forward operating base there. He apparently had just recently seen some of his comrades wounded and critically ill or wounded. The man was on his fourth tour, several in Iraq and now Afghanistan. He had lost apparently part of his foot, suffered a head injury. We don't know the extent of that. You know, given those circumstances, the stress of what's going on, he apparently, you know, broke and went out into a local village and killed 16 people. Tragic incident, this sort of thing. You know, you want to prevent, obviously, Leon Panetta, the Secretary of Defense, rushed over to Afghanistan trying to preserve what relationship we do have with Kabul, but a very difficult time.
Karzai is making a statement. He wants NATO, and that would include U.S. soldiers, at least out of the villages there in Afghanistan. Is he demanding that NATO and the United States military move all the way out of Afghanistan at this time?
Well, he's not gone that far, Jimmy. He recognizes that he needs NATO to continue doing some training before there's a handoff in Plan 2014. Now, removing them from the villages, of course, surrenders them to Afghan forces that may not be ready, and frankly, in a counterinsurgency, which allegedly the president started in December of 2009, you need to be embedded in the population. So this is acknowledgement by Karzai that things just aren't working, that he wants to hurry up our exit. And frankly, you know, I don't know that we're going to accomplish much more in the next year. So, you know, I've been saying for a long time that spending more blood and treasure in Afghanistan the way we are is not going to be very productive.
Yeah, let's get out as quickly as we can and cut our losses. All right, what about, we'll go back to Washington, D.C. There was a meeting between Prime Minister Cameron of Great Britain and also President Obama there at the White House. A couple of days, even to a couple of basketball games. Talk to us about the importance of this meeting. I mean, is it a major meeting that needed to be held in light of all that's going on?
Well, it is an important ally, the Brits. Though they're a relatively small nation, they have, of course, stepped up to the plate in places like NATO and Libya. And they were going to discuss not only Afghanistan and the situation involving there, but also Iran and Syria, and talk about, as well, the G8 summits that are coming up this week. So there are a host of issues that were on their plate. I'm sure that they dealt with each of those. Britain has been a consistently good ally for many years, and so I'm sure that Mr. Obama needs Dave Cameron's assistance as they go into some delicate meetings.
Here in Jerusalem, we have been getting some reports from that particular meeting, and the fact is that Cameron has made a statement. He is not endorsing any type of preemptive attack on Iran by the Israelis. In fact, he is making the statement that it would be much, much better if indeed there was no preemptive attack. I would imagine that Obama and Cameron both discussed that in their White House activities.
Well, no doubt. That's probably was topic one. The Brits are relying upon Persian Gulf oil probably more than the U.S., but they would suffer tremendously from the rapid escalation in prices should there be a strike over there. So that's probably what he is responding to. And, of course, he also has a very large Muslim population that is proven in the past to be rather volatile. So given that, I'm sure that he'll continue to oppose, for at least the near term, any strike on Iran, even though I think everyone is convinced that Iran is well on its way to making a nuclear-capable arsenal.
Bob, this last week was the first anniversary of the uprising in Syria. You mentioned Syria just a moment ago, probably part of the discussions that Cameron and Obama had as well because of NATO's involvement or possible involvement there. Meanwhile, Vladimir Putin, who will become the president very soon, Russia itself is refusing to stop sending arms into Syria. This only seems to prolong what's going on there. What about Moscow? What's the situation?
That relationship is rather long, over many decades. They have well-established sales agreements with the Russian arms dealers and Damascus. So I'm not surprised at all that they would take that position. Keep in mind, it was Moscow and Beijing that vetoed the UN Security Council resolution calling for Bashar Assad to step down. And that's because Moscow would lose its grip in the Middle East if it lost control or at least influence in Syria. And it doesn't want that. And interestingly, so would, at least in the western part of the Middle East, Iran, if it lost Syria. So there's a lot of reasons from their perspective to have him maintained. And quite frankly, from the looks of things, it appears as if Assad is going to survive much like his father. There's not going to be intervention from the West, apparently, and the Arabs are not going to intervene, though they will complain and they'll point a finger at the West for not intervening.
Well, and there's some report coming out of Iraq, both accepting the fact that the Iranians are sending arms into Syria across the airspace there over Iraq, but meanwhile, Prime Minister Maliki rejecting that, saying it's not happening. Is Iraq a part of this whole mixture of what's happening there in Syria?
Well, I can't imagine that Maliki is that naive to believe that his former homeland of Iran is not sending arms either through the airspace or on the ground. There's a lot of transportation of goods back and forth into Syria from Iran. Iraq is in between them, and I'm sure that a lot of eyes are turning left and right so that they don't see that transportation, but it's inevitable and something that I think, quite frankly, would ingratiate Maliki to his friends, let's say, in Tehran.
Yeah. You know, you made a very interesting statement just a moment ago that you think Bashar Assad is going to survive this whole situation. Meanwhile, China and Russia, you mentioned Beijing and Moscow a moment ago, China and Russia claiming they have honorable intentions with their Syria policy. Looks like it's coming out to the good for them.
Oh, it is. Bashar Assad has a very large military. The Alawi tribe that he is associated with is not going to crumble. It's being loyal. But I don't see any indication at this point that the rebels have sufficient capability to push back against him. And in fact, here recently you've seen the Syrian armed forces take back some rebel-held towns like Homs. So, given these factors, the Turks aren't going to invade, the Jordanians aren't going to invade. They may provide harbor to some of the Syrian resistance fighters, but there's just no probability in my mind, at least a large one, that Assad's going to fall.
Yeah, absolutely. Colonel Bob McGinnis from Washington, D.C., giving us insight into geopolitical activities. Bob, thank you so very much for your input.
Thank you, Jimmy.